And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. And, as I have said numerous times, one of the most corrupt. If you want to be a crooked roofer, this is the place to come. You take the inspectors out to lunch every day, you can do as you please. You don't have to meet any standards. And if you lose a court suit, file the same thing, using the same evidence, using crooked attorneys, and I can give you a list of them. Well, today's August the 25th, 237th day of the year. 128 days remain till the year's over with. Rich Forrest is in the hospital. Right now, there's a major battle going on about who controls his money. I think we've got a crooked attorney there, too. Well, today's, as I said, August 25th. In the year 766, Emperor Constantine V humiliates 19 high-ranking officials after discovering a plot against him. He executes the leaders, Constantine Protopagoras and his brother Stratigios. In 1248, the Dutch city of Omnun receives city rights and fortification rights from Otto the Alrighty. In the year 1248, the Dutch city of Ummen received city rights and fortification rights from Otto III, who's the Archbishop of Utrecht. If God told him to tell them that, then who's going to question it? Of course, who can confirm that God actually told him that? 1258, the regent, George Muzalon, and his brothers are killed during a coup headed by the aristocratic faction under Michael VIII. Palaiologus, paving the way for its leader to ultimately usurp the throne of the Empire of Nicaea. 1270, Philip III, although suffering from dysentery, becomes king of France following the death of Alrighty. Once again, I keep getting numerous emails I unfortunately have to respond to. 1537, the Honorable Artillery Company, the oldest surviving regiment in the British Army and the second most senior, is formed. 1543, Antonio Motta and a few companions become the first Europeans to actually visit Japan. 1580, War of the Portuguese Succession. Spanish victory at the Battle of Alcantara brings about the Iberian Union. 1609, Galileo Galilei demonstrates his first telescope to Venetian lawmakers. Up to that point in time, it was taught in religion that the world, the solar system revolved around the Earth. In 1630, Portuguese forces are defeated by the Kingdom of Kandy at the Battle of Randinawela in Sri Lanka. 1758, 7 Years' War. Frederick II of Prussia defeats the Russian army at the Battle of Zorndorf. 1814, War of 1812. On the second day of the burning of Washington, British troops torched the Library of Congress, the United States Treasury, the Department of War, and all a bunch of other public buildings. Urban renewal, don't you know? 1823, American fur trapper Hugh Glass is mauled by a grizzly bear while on an expedition to South Dakota. 1825, 33 Orientals declare the independence of Uruguay from Brazil. 1830, the Belgian Revolution begins. 1835, the first Great Moon Hoax article is published in the New York Sun. It announced the discovery of life and civilization on the moon, and this began a daily column. 1875, Captain Matthew Webb becomes the first person to swim across the English Channel, traveling from Dover, England to Calais, France in 21 hours and 45 minutes. 1883, France and Vietnam sign the Treaty of Hue, recognizing a French protectorate over Annam and Tonkin. 1894, Kinosato Shibasaburo discovers the infectious agent of the bubonic plague and publishes findings in The Lancet, the medical magazine. 1898, 700 Greek civilians, 17 British guards, and the British consul of Crete are killed by a Turkish mob in Herculaneum in Greece. 1914, World War I. Japan declares war on Austria-Hungary. 1914, World War I. The library of the Catholic University of Louvain is deliberately destroyed by the German army. Hundreds of thousands of irreplaceable volumes and Gothic and Renaissance manuscripts are destroyed. 1916, United States National Park Service is created on this date. 1920, Polish-Soviet War. Battle of Warsaw, which began August 13, ends with the Red Army's defeat. 1933, the Dieksi earthquake strikes Mao County, Sichuan, China, and kills 9,000 people. 1939, the UK and Poland form a military alliance in which the UK promises to defend Poland in case of invasion by a foreign power. 1940, World War II, the first bombing of Berlin by the British Royal Air Force. 1942, World War II, the second day of the Battle of the Eastern Solomons, a Japanese naval transport convoy headed towards Guadalcanal is turned back by an Allied air attack. 1944, World War II, Paris is liberated by the Allies on this date. 1945, 10 days after World War II ends with the Japanese announcing its surrender, armed supporters of the Chinese Communist Party kill U.S. intelligence officer John Birch, regarded by some Americans on the right as the first victim of the Cold War, and the John Birch Society came out of that murder. 1945, the August Revolution ends as Emperor Mao Dai abdicates, ends the Nguyen Dynasty. 1948, the House Un-American Activities Committee holds first ever televised congressional hearings called Confrontation Day between Whitaker Chambers and Alger Hiss. 1950, to avert a threatened strike during the Korean War, President Truman orders Secretary of the Army Frank Pace to seize control of the nation's railroads. 1961, President Jânio Quadros of Brazil resigns after just 7 months in power. This begins the political crisis that culminates in a military coup in 1964. 1967, George Lincoln Rockwell, founder of the American Nazi Party, is assassinated by a former member of his group. That may have had something to do with the assassination of President Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy. I've written a book on that. 1980. In fact, I got a 2-hour tape from a former contract CIA agent who goes into quite a bit of detail about that. Names. 1980, Zimbabwe joins the United Nations. 1981, Voyager 2 spacecraft makes its closest approach to Saturn. 1989, Voyager 2 makes the closest approach to Neptune, the last planet of the solar system at that time due to Pluto being within Neptune's orbit from 1979 to 1999. 1991, Belarus gained its independence from the Soviet Union. 1991, the Battle of Vukovar begins. An 87-day siege of Vukovar by the Yugoslav People's Army, supported by various Serb paramilitary forces. It's between August and November of 1991. That's during the Croatian War of Independence. 1991, Linus Torvalds announced the first version of what will become Linux, which is similar in what it does to Windows. 1997, Egon Krenz, the former East German leader, is convicted of a shoot-to-kill policy at the Berlin Wall. 2001, American singer Alia and several members of a record company are killed as their overloaded aircraft crashes shortly after takeoff from Marsh Harbor Airport in the Bahamas. Some interesting things have come to light about that crash. Apparently, she was carried on the plane comatose, totally unconscious. Nobody seems to know what all went on. 2006, former Prime Minister of Ukraine, Pavlo Lazarenko, sentenced to 9 years imprisonment for money laundering, wire fraud, and extortion. 2012, Voyager 1 spacecraft enters interstellar space, becoming the first man-made object to do so. And in 2017, Hurricane Harvey makes landfall in Texas as a powerful Category 4 hurricane. And that's the strongest hurricane to make landfall in the United States since 2004. And over the next few days, the storm causes catastrophic flooding throughout much of East Texas, kills 106 people and causes $125 billion in damage in 2017 dollars. Now, on this particular date, there's a whole lot of births and deaths. Far too many to go into. Let's see what got on the holidays observances. Abbey of Coldingham, Aretius, Genesius of Arles, and Genesius of Rome, Johannes de la Hara, or Genesius of Cartagena, Gregory of Utrecht, Joseph Calasanz, Louis the Ninth of France, Blessed Ludovicus Baba, Blessed Ludovicus Sassada, Blessed Louis Sotelo, Minas of Constantinople, Blessed Miguel of Carvajal, Patricia of Naples, Blessed Pedro Vasquez, Thomas de Cantaloupe, Day of Songun in North Korea, earliest day in which Father's Day can fall. August 31st is the latest, celebrated on the last Monday in August in South Sudan. Earliest day on which La Tomatina can fall, August 31st is the latest, celebrated on the last Wednesday in August in Bunol. Independence Day, which celebrates the independence of Uruguay from Brazil in 1825. In France, it's considered Liberation Day. In Brazil, it's Soldiers' Day. Let's see what else we've got here. There's quite a number of... There we go. In 325, the First Council of Nicaea ends with the adoption of the Nicene Creed, which established the doctrine of the Holy Trinity. Do you know how it was decided that Jesus was the Son of God? By a show of hands. And Christian Saint, Greek Bishop of Myra, Saint Nicholas, was heavily involved in this. The doctrine of the Holy Trinity was also established through a show of hands. So you got a lot of humans deciding what God wanted. Battle of Strasbourg, Julianus beats Alaminin, and Conor de Marius is caught. 1212, the Children's Crusade under Nicholas reaches Genoa. Now what's interesting, they were going on a crusade. They were going to take back the Holy Land. Most of them vanished, probably into slave camps. 1330, Anna Pope Nicholas V, having obtained assurance of a pardon, presents a confession of his sins to Pope John XXII at Avignon, who absolved him of his sins by waving his hand and saying, "You are absolved," as if it never happened. 1425, Countess Jacoba Bavaria escapes from jail. 1499, Battle of Sapienza. The Turkish fleet beats the Venetians. 1515, Conquistador Diego Velasquez de Cuellar founds Havana in modern-day Cuba. It's on the south coast of the island. It wasn't moved to its current location until 1519. 1540, explorer Hernando de Alarcón travels up the Colorado River. 1628, there was an assault on the Sultan of Montaramas of Batavia. 1654, the Battle of Arras. Louis de Bourbon, Prince of Condé, failed to take Arras and with Duke of Cambrai. 1689, the Battle of Charleroi. The Spanish and English armies chased the French. They ran pretty good, don't you know? 1718, on this date, hundreds of French colonists arrived in Louisiana. The city of New Orleans is founded. 1804, Alicia Thornton becomes the first female jockey in England, riding at Knavesmere in Yorkshire. 1829, President Andrew Jackson made an offer to buy Texas. Nixon government refused. 1830, Belgium revolts against the Netherlands, begins the Belgian Revolution. 1964, combination rail and ferry service available from San Francisco to Alameda. Now, let's see. In 1892, British naval officer David Beatty, who went on to become the Admiral of the Fleet, is promoted to lieutenant. 1894, the Balinese troops assault the Dutch army, 97 casualties. 1910, the Yellow Cab Company is formed. New York City, I believe. 1912, on this date, is the first time an aircraft recovered from a spin. 1914, the German Zeppelins bomb Antwerp, Belgium. 10 people die. 1916, U.S. Department of Interior forms the National Park Service. 1919, on this date, was the first scheduled passenger service by airplane from Paris to London. 1921, the U.S. signed a peace treaty with Germany. 1921 was the first skirmish of what was called the Battle of Blair Mountain. That was a civilian uprising in Logan County, West Virginia. 1925, the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters is organized in Harlem, New York. The reason for that is most of the porters in the sleeping cars were actually African-American. 1929, the Graf Zeppelin passes over San Francisco for Los Angeles after a trans-Pacific voyage. The Graf Zeppelin was, at that point in time, the most modern way to travel by air. This day in 1932, Amelia Earhart completed a transcontinental flight. I just got an interesting email. There's a veterans group that's used intelligence and satellites to direct Afghan interpreters how to get around Taliban checkpoints. So they haven't forgotten the folks that helped them while they were there. 1941, British and Soviet troops attacked the pro-German country of Iran. 1941, German troops conquered Novgorod and Leningrad. 1943, German occupiers imposed a 72-hour work week in the areas in which they control. 1943, Admiral Lord Lewis Mountbatten appointed Supreme Allied Commander in Southeast Asia. He was the Supreme Allied Commander and the last Viceroy of India, known as Lord Mountbatten. He was actually killed by a bomb on his boat. 1943, U.S. forces overrun New Georgia and the Solomon Islands during World War II. 1944, the U.S. Army 12th Corps reaches Troyes in France. 1950, President Truman ordered the Army to take control of the railroads to avert a strike. 1950, let's see what else, if anything, we have. Oh, this is very important. 1958, Momofuku Ando markets the first package of pre-cooked instant noodles. It's known as chicken ramen. I know a lot of folks that got through college eating that. 1967, the Beatles go to Wales to study transcendental meditation with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. 1970, Elton John's first U.S. appearance at the Troubadour in West Hollywood, Los Angeles. And finally, in 1979, a series that I liked, Heart to Heart, starring Robert Wagner and Stephanie Powers, premieres on ABC. The initial part was written by Sidney Sheldon. Okay, we've come to the end now of our little history segment. We're going to talk about a new topic. Mysterious black helicopters. Okay. Now, there's a lot of folks that believe the black helicopters have something to do with the UFOs, and they may. But there's just as many who believe that the black helicopters represent a threat to our freedom and autonomy as a nation. Now, there's a lot of people who believe the United Nations and their allies in the U.S., and when I say that, I'm talking about the liberal left, are determined to take away our national sovereignty. They don't want an independent United States. They want us to be one of many nations in a one-world government. They want us to think of ourselves as citizens of the world, not of the U.S. And they're serious about this proposition. They think our existing democratic system is outdated and obsolete in this modern globalized world. That's why everybody hated Trump, because he said America first. They want to replace what they believe is a more relevant and all-encompassing one-world government under the United Nations. It dilutes and negates the power this country has. It would make every country equal, regardless of their productivity, population, or economic strength. They call it global government. We would see it as the end of freedom. And they're not out to create an alternative source of governments. To create an alternative source of government. They want one we can't control, and it's meant to basically, in their words, make everybody equal except those at the top. Just like the communist regime, the rulers at the top have everything. Everybody else is just peons. Decades ago, groups opposed to intrusive government actions and those who feared an attempt to create a new world order talked about being surveilled by black helicopters, particularly in the western United States. And many of them thought UN personnel were piloting the helicopters. Interestingly enough, I never believed any of this in the beginning until I was on a trip and I saw several train loads of military vehicles painted white, which is how the UN designates their vehicles, being transported across the country. In the 1990s, Congresswoman Helen Chenoweth, Republican of Indiana, held hearings about the use of black helicopters by the Federal Fish and Wildlife Bureau to harass farmers and ranchers in her state. The EPA secretly admitted it sanctions unannounced aerial surveillance flyovers in order to monitor compliance with the Clean Water Act out in the West. So, the phrase black helicopters is used to paint as crackpots anybody who fears government intrusion and usurpation of our national government to a global entity. You know, the left, the mainstream media, which is mostly leans to the left, in fact, a number of the folks, I don't know how they walk upright. If they want to silence somebody, they just ridicule them on the air. And there's no way the people they're ridiculing can have an equal say. Now, that phrase is a favorite propaganda tool of prominent liberals who want to use it whenever they want to mock conservatives. In testimony in front of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, May 24, 2012, Secretary of State Hillary "I Am God" Clinton taunted opponents of the controversial law of the Sea Treaty. She chided critics who object to the U.S. joining in the UN treaty by saying, of course, that means the black helicopters are on their way. Now, that's a reference to conspiracy theories that a lot of people have about the desire of the liberal left to have a one-world government. And interestingly enough, her sarcastic remarks were close to the truth about what's actually happening. With one big exception. There's no secret conspiracy to emasculate U.S. government and replace its power to govern and regulate with the UN or independent international commissions. No, the intention to do this is way out in the open. It's right in front of our noses. We just have to collect the dots. And it's not just Hillary who pejoratively refers to the opponents of one world government. New York Times used the term black helicopter crowd in a headline. On July 12, 2012, Eric Fanner of the New York Times wrote an article titled "The Black Helicopter Crowd Among American Geeks Has It Wrong." And he began his article with this just in from Geneva. The United Nations has no plans to seize control of the Internet. The web-snatching black helicopters have not left the hangar. But it turns out it wasn't a black helicopter crowd that got it wrong. It was the New York Times reporter. Well, the leftists, the globalists, and radical environmentalists who advocate this new political alignment deny they're trying to establish an international government. According to them, their utopian system for planetary decision-making is most definitely not a plan for a one-world government. It's a plan for global governance by many agencies and commissions on many issues. So what's the difference? They claim that global governments is definitely not meant to supersede nation-states or infringe on national sovereignty. Well, if that's the case, let's take a look at what they actually do endorse. In 1995, the United Nations Commission on Global Governance published its report entitled "Our Global Neighborhood." You can find it on the internet. It's entitled "Commission on Global Governance: Our Global Neighborhood." You can find it at sovereignty.net. And according to this document, there are certain recommendations that need to be carried out immediately. Number one, establishing an economic security council to oversee worldwide economies. Authorizing United Nations and its agencies to impose global taxes. Instituting a UN army to replace the sovereign states' armies. Terminating the veto power of permanent members of the UN, which of course does include the United States. Creating an international criminal court. Creating a new body of the UN for civil society, which advocates for the environment, population control. And they want it to play a role in policy making. Placing the authority for regulating the production and distribution of arms in the UN. Now that's gun control, no matter how you look at it. Granting mandatory jurisdiction in the International Court of Justice for all members. Now, the U.S. has never accepted this particular suggestion. And ceding jurisdiction over the global commons, such as ocean, space, and the environment, to the Trusteeship Council. Now, you've got somebody who yesterday was herding goats in Saudi Arabia who gets placed on the council, and he's going to tell you how to do things. Now, do these sound like the activities of a body that's not trying to institute a global government? For example, the power to tax, without representation, I might add, as well as to legislate, regulate, and enforce, looks strikingly like the powers usually granted to a government. In the U.S., we convey these powers to our national government with the understanding to be exercised within the framework of our Constitution by public officials elected by and accountable to the citizens. Well, under this scenario, the UN is not accountable to anybody. Global governments have simply created a governmental body with no democratic underpinnings, run by bureaucrats with no accountability to anybody. And five against you ten, within a decade, they will decide one man needs to control everything and we'll have a international king that will probably come from one of the hereditary families out of Europe. Geographic countries no longer be important. They see the notion of governing based on sovereign territory or land as old-fashioned. According to what the commission said, acknowledging responsibility to something higher than country does not come easily. We know that. The impulse to possess turf is a powerful one for all species, but it's one that people have to overcome. In the global neighborhood, a sense of otherness cannot be allowed to nourish instincts of insularity, intolerance, greed, bigotry, and above all, desire for dominance. But barricades in the mind can be even more negative than frontiers on the ground. Globalization has made these frontiers increasingly irrelevant. You see, we just need to learn how irrelevant our national boundaries and national government really are. Because the UN envisions that we'll have to be taught to acknowledge responsibility to something beyond our existing government and political institutions. Next, as for infringing on national sovereignty, Marie Strong, an avid socialist, except where when capitalism benefits him personally, is one of the members of the Commission on Global Governments. And he said sovereignty has been the cornerstone of the interstate system. It's an increasingly interdependent world. The notion of territoriality, independence, and non-intervention have lost some of their meaning. In fact, in certain areas, sovereignty must be exercised collectively, particularly in relation to the global commons. The principle of sovereignty and non-intervention must be adapted in ways that recognize the need to balance the rights of states with the rights of people, the interest of nations within the interest of the global neighborhood. It's time to think about self-determination in the emerging context of a world of separate states. Now, if you'll remember, Hillary Clinton wrote a book called It Takes a Village to Raise a Child. That's socialism. Now, does that sound like a statement in support of maintaining independent national governments? I don't think so. If you know how to read, consider this. In certain areas, sovereignty needs to be exercised collectively. That seems to be the ultimate oxymoron. Collective sovereignty. Can't exist. A sovereign nation exerts its own power. It's the opposite of a collective government. And that's why they want to stop the U.S. from functioning as a free nation. Now, we need to keep these folks out of our business, out of our national neighborhood. We have to stop them because we have no intention of subjecting ourselves to their socialist nanny state. But they're still pushing today the very same proposals they made in 1995. Now, this is not a bunch of fringe liberals, as you might think. They've already taken over the Democratic Party, lock, stock, and barrel. This is a well-organized international movement to change the world, to minimize the importance of our country and regulate our personal behavior. And over the last 20 years, this movement's becoming stronger and stronger. And unfortunately, such luminaries as Barack Obama is among its allies. And as we've seen with his birthday party, where all the rules were ignored because it was a religious experience to go to his birthday party. The Europeans have long supported the concept of giving up their sovereignty. That's what the European Union is all about. And they've been supportive of global governments. On November 20, 2020, in a speech at The Hague, French President Jacques Chirac gave a speech celebrating the United Nations Kyoto Protocol, which was the first step toward global governments. He said, for a time, humanity is instituting a genuine instrument of global, for the first time, humanity is instituting a genuine instrument for global governments. From the very early stage, we should make environmental awareness a major theme of education and a major theme of political debate. To respect for the environment comes to be as fundamental as safeguarding our rights and freedoms. By acting together, by building this unprecedented instrument, the first component of authentic global governments, we're working for a dialogue and peace. But I would point out at the very same time, John Kerry, who is a global warming extremist, flies around in his private jet. And if you look at all those who come to all the different climate control, global warming meetings, the last one that I remember reading about, there were 400 private jets that brought their delegates. Now, you don't think that caused a problem with the environment? And yet, as long as it affects them, it's irrelevant. But what affects the rest of us? Oh, they got to have control of that. In a speech at Oxford, England in 2009, former Vice President, Nobel Prize winner, Al Mann and My Wonderful Gore told his audience he brought good news for America. The passage of cap-and-trade legislation and awareness of it will drive the change, and one of the ways it will drive the change is through global government and global agreements. Now, the only ones in this country that seem to be in favor of this, besides the liberal left, are those who think they're going to be in positions of power. And there's a lot of other buzzwords that have been developed that are used for talking about global governments. Bill Clinton called it interdependence through his William J. Clinton Foundation. He supports global governments under the rubric of interdependence and spends more than $100 million a year to promote this euphemism for global governments. That's also the same foundation that raised so much money to help Haiti and didn't spend a dime there. But his daughter had a hell of a wedding paid for by the foundation. Some well-known liberal supporters believe the fight's over and that some form of global government's inevitable. Strobe Talbott, former Clinton administration undersecretary of state and head of the Brookings Institute, insists that individual states will increasingly see it in their interest to form an international system that is far more cohesive, far more empowered by its members, and far more effective than what we have today. Now, some of the responses he got I thought were interesting. The one I especially like said some of us actually believe that our current system of democratic government with its guaranteed freedoms and liberties is far more effective than anything you and the United Nations can dream up. Maybe you need to go back to your ivory tower and read the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. Economist Professor Jeffrey Sachs, head of the Earth Institute at Columbia University, and another ivory tower scientist and a staunch believer in the need for cooperative global action, said the very idea of competing nation states that scramble for markets, power, and resources will become passé. So he's thinking competing nation states will become passé. Well, I don't think so. But let's go back and say, what exactly is global governments? Nothing less than a massive, audacious power grab of the United Nations. That's an attempt to redefine the world order. I'd point out that the League of Nations that was supposed to end war didn't. And the United Nations hasn't. But unfortunately, it's not just our power they're after. They want our wealth, our assets, and our technology as well. They want to take them and redistribute them to the poorer, less successful countries of the world. They think we owe it to them. They also want to control our land use planning and our consumption of food and energy. That's because we're the cause of all the planet's environmental problems, in their mind. They got big plans for how they're going to change our ways. Maurice Strong, the socialist architect and primary advocate for this global government's doctrine, who's considered to be the godfather of the modern environmental movement, told the opening session of the Rio Earth Summit in 1992 that industrialized countries have developed and benefited from the unsustainable patterns of production and consumption that have produced our present dilemma. It's clear that current lifestyles and consumption patterns of the affluent middle class involving high meat intake, consumption of large amounts of frozen and convenience food, use of fossil foods, fuels, appliances, home and work, place air conditioning, and suburban housing are not sustainable. A shift is necessary to our lifestyles less geared to environmentally damaging consumption patterns. In other words, everybody but him needs to be living in a grass hut. No air conditioning, no indoor plumbing. But he and others of his group, they got to be taken care of. For the past 40 years, Strong, a former Undersecretary General of the UN, has been at the epicenter of just about every conference, commission, meeting, and agenda that is proposed and advocated population control, global governments, and radical environmentalism. He was a member of the Club of Rome. He represented Canada on the Commission for Global Growth, and he was Secretary General of both the Stockholm and Rio Environmental Conferences, first director of the United Nations Environmental Program, leading force behind the Kyoto Protocol, and along with Mikhail Gorbachev, he co-authored the Earth Charter, a controversial document that was criticized as the blueprint for one-world socialism. That charter expanded the rights of man, included the rights of others on the planet, such as rivers and mountains. His career at the UN ended in the most undistinguished way in 1977. According to the Wall Street Journal, Evidence procured by federal investigators and the unauthorized inquiry of Paul Volcker showed that Mr. Strong in 97, while working with Mr. Anand, had endorsed a check for $988,885 made out to Mr. M. Strong, issued by a Jordanian bank, hand delivered to Mr. Strong by a South Korean businessman, Tong Sung Park. In 2006, Tong Sung Park was convicted in New York federal court of conspiring to bribe UN officials to rig oil for food in favor of Saddam. So my question is, who can you trust that is not out to feather their own nest? Well, Mr. Strong was actually never accused of any wrongdoing. He was not quite on the Barack Obama level, where he's considered a god among men, but he was certainly well up there. Asked by investigators about that check, he initially denied he'd ever seen it. But when they showed it to him with his own signature on the back, he acknowledged he must have endorsed it, but said the money was meant to cover an investment Mr. Park wanted to make in a Strong family company, Cordex, which was run by one of Strong's sons. Shortly after that, Cordex went bankrupt. Nobody knows what happened to all the money that was in it. Mr. Volcker, in his final report, said the UN might want to address the need for more rigorous disclosure process for conflicts of interest. Now, Strong has left the UN, spends most of his time in China, where he advises the Chinese government, teaches at Chinese universities, and advises Chinese businesses. So I think we see where his loyalty lies. 1995, at the time the allegations get stronger made, he was a United Nations special envoy to South Korea. According to the New York Times, Strong stepped aside from his post because of his past associations with Mr. Park, and his contract was not renewed. He lives in Beijing. He's a favorite of the Chinese, instrumental in drafting and negotiating the Kyoto Protocol, which excluded China and India from the carbon reduction requirements. And recently, the Chinese actually paid him to attend the Rio 20 conference. He's one of the pilots on the imaginary black helicopters, I guess you could say. If he handed it his way, they'd be landing right now, and everything would become Chinese. Now, in the quote that I made earlier, Strong was talking about Americans, and he didn't approve of how we live. So he and his cohorts want us to move out of rural areas, clear out the suburbs, stop driving cars, stop using appliances. He wants to control how we live, what we eat, and how we use our property for the benefit of those in other countries, don't you know? In short, they want to end our ability to self-government and impose on international rule of law that is designed to operate against our national interest, violate our democratic ideals and history, and make us subservient to the radical socialist policies of the United Nations and its agencies. Most folks wouldn't be so anti-UN if they weren't so far to the left. Now, an international law that would find no subject, no issue, no practice too unimportant to focus on. These aren't big picture folks. They're small picture folks. They want to regulate and control everything we do. How would you like somebody from China to tell you if you can have air conditioning or not? That's what they want. So in addition to our major political agenda, they also want to zero in on personal behavior. Think about New York City's mayor, Michael Bloomberg, a former mayor, ban on the use of salt in restaurants, and his proposal to prohibit the sale of large-sized sodas. They want a nanny state where they tell you what, in their opinion, is for your benefit. Now, these goals that have been expressed for one world governments aren't just idealistic daydreams. They're part of a carefully designed blueprint for changing the world order and changing the way we think, live, work, and make decisions. They just simply cannot tolerate the U.S. as a free democratic country because we don't conform to their agenda. They don't want individual freedom. There's nobody in charge. And that's why their goal is to obliterate the U.S. as we know it, to turn our democracy on its head and impose a government that regulates our every private and personal action. They don't want the U.S. to be independent. And Bill Clinton did everything in his power to try to accomplish that. The problem is he got sidetracked by Monica Lewinsky and a number of other scandals. They want us to be part of a global governance where we're just one of many other countries in the world. Now, another statement from Murray Strong, I think, is interesting. He said, the concept of national sovereignty has been an immutable, indeed sacred, principle of international relations. It's a principle that will yield only slowly and reluctantly to the new imperative of global environmental cooperation. What is needed is recognition of the reality in so many fields, and this is particularly true of environmental issues. It's simply not feasible for sovereignty to be exercised unilaterally by individual nation states, no matter how powerful they might be, and that, of course, is directed toward us. The global community must be assured of environmental security. So he's saying it's not feasible for countries to exercise their sovereign power to regulate their own country when it comes to the environment and certain other fields that Strong and his comrades want to control. What's not feasible about the ability of the U.S. of America to legislate, regulate, and enforce its own environmental laws? Well, certainly it is feasible. The only thing that's not feasible about it is that the United States would adapt the radical, confiscatory, and punitive policies Strong and his sidekicks recommend be put into place. The only thing that's not feasible is that we would ignore our constitutional protections for private property and individual liberty. And that's why the globalists at the United Nations want to take the power to govern our country on environmental and other issues away from us, because they want to slowly move that control into other areas. So frankly, this threatens our existence because we refuse to conform to their view of the world, and they can't stand that. And that's why so much evidence has come to light that there were certain irregularities with the most recent election that put the liberal, ultra-liberal wing of the Democratic Party in charge of this country. Now, global governments is a menace to our nation's liberty, democracy, and sovereignty. Although the ongoing attempts to formalize global governments have heightened recently, the mainstream media has paid little attention to what's going on. They're too busy worrying about how much Trump was involved with the riot in Washington, D.C., even though the most recent headlines say the FBI can't find any proof that he organized it and carried it out. Maybe the media hadn't connected the dots, or they think they're too powerful to be bothered. The power grab of the United Nations is scarcely attracting any comment, and if with no comment, there's very little opposition. Now, right now, there's a frightening worldwide movement ahead, spearheaded by liberals, socialists, globalists, and radical environmentalists. And even though they've lowered their profile somewhat, they're very much in action. They want to dominate us globally by seriously limiting our freedom, forcibly changing our lifestyles, emasculating our democratic institutions. We had, for all practical purposes, made Afghan Taliban free until our current commander-in-chief handed it back to him on a silver platter. They want the rule of law to be directed by faceless, unaccountable bureaucrats. How many federal government agencies have you dealt with where faceless, unaccountable bureaucrats have damaged your rights? They want the rule of law that's antithetical to our representative system of government. The rule of law that's based on a socialist philosophy is what they're wanting, and one that has an anti-American bias. In short, these globalists and socialists want to reorganize the world into an easily managed, cohesive group of nations that give up their sovereignty to a series of international organizations associated with the UN. And unfortunately, it's kind of like Rome burned as Nero fiddled. And right now, we got a commander-in-chief that seems to be fiddling more than he does anything else. Now, I'm not going to descend into the world of political finger-pointing. I will point out, as a disabled veteran, that much of our military problems we brought on ourselves by allowing untrained suits to run military operations. The mere fact they get appointed to something does not make them royalty or all-knowing. It's just like our current congresswoman here that I've gone to with violations of federal civil rights and been told by her office that she didn't have time for disabled veterans. She's got to worry about all the undocumented immigrants that she wants to get into this country. Now, global governments at its core is a process of decision-making that's intended to systematically undermine the sovereignty and authority of successful nations like us and Japan and a few others. The central organizing tool for the imposition of one world government has been the worldwide environmental movement to overcome the assumed dangers of climate change. That has never been proven. The globe on its own goes through periods of cooling and heating. If you study history and you pay attention without your preconceived notions, that is very evident. And whether you subscribe to the existence of global warming and need to protect the planet, it doesn't really matter. It was the issue whether climate change is man-made. These aren't really issues that matter outside of debates. What's the issue is that since its inception, many of the most important leaders of the planetary global warming movement have capitalized on fear, the consequences of global warming. Fear is that, for the most part, they created. Al Gore, who was, because of his wonderful nature, wound up owning a TV network, sold it to Al Jazeera, and made a fortune. You know, advancing in the name of environmentalism, social justice, and sustainability, the globalists and socialists that run in the United Nations are moving ahead with their far-reaching game plan to end national sovereignty. Their stated goals are to reverse climate change, reduce carbon emissions, increase living standards in the impoverished southern hemisphere, and make development sustainable in an area of limited, diminishing natural resources. But that's what they say. But however much they believe in environmental reforms, their real goal is to establish a one-world government, documented by themselves. Having spent time in South America, many of their problems are self-created. Instead of trying to raise the living standard of their peoples, they're trying to feather their own nest. For all the foreign aid we've sent to them, most of it goes into the pocket of the few that run the countries. And just as Karl Marx called for a global government of the working class, they want one of economists, social scientists, environmentalists, and other self-chosen academic elites. The mere fact you may be asked to teach doesn't make you an expert. Some of the dumbest people I've ever met were teachers. I'm sure all of them mean well, but when I was coming up through, now I've got 5 degrees. Coming up through school, I had it hammered into me about the theory of evolution. I stress the word theory. If you say anything against it, you've criticized Charles Darwin, a god among men. Theory means that that's an idea. It hadn't been proven. And it never has been proven and can't be proven until they find the missing link. Just as Marx used the poverty of the labor force in 19th century capitalism as the cornerstone in formulating his plans, they used the supposed threat to the global environment as theirs. Now, there are two political philosophy camps in the world today. Those who believe in free markets and individual liberty, and those who believe in central planning and dictation from above. Those who believe in freedom root their conviction that free people, free markets, and free competition will steer the world in the right direction. Public education substituting for central planning and direction. For those who believe that the more brilliant should sit at the top and tell everybody else what to do, well, they're just doing it to make themselves look good. I have dealt with many, many people who believe their ideas are the best. As I came up through the military and through corporate, since I didn't believe in many of the things that the corporate leaders did, I was never number one in line to get any of the benefits. But as soon as their fair-haired boy screwed up, I was called to please come in and fix it. Unfortunately, once it was fixed, they gave it back to the fair-haired boys, because that's how the good old boy system works. And that's, in effect, what all this is. Now, you may wonder what this has to do with black helicopters. Well, they're not a myth. They're not a legend. I've seen them. And they have been used. In fact, when they went to get Osama, That was a silent, almost silent helicopter. There are many of those out there. Our government has things that they'll never agree to talk about. Area 51? Well, when I took a busload of people there a number of years ago, we saw silent aircraft flying above the base. And then Freedom Hill was just taken by the government to keep people from being able to oversee the base. And there's mystery upon mystery that we'll never have the answers to until our own government comes clean and starts telling the citizens that pay and furnish all this taxpayer money, starts demanding answers. But too many people go, oh, the government said, so we have to. No, you don't. They have a duty. For example, I talked in the last few shows about the fact that we've got hundreds of thousands of photographs taken by taxpayer-funded spacecraft on Mars and the Moon that we can't see because, well, it's above our clearance level. No, it's not. As a taxpayer, you have the highest clearance level there is. Demand it. Well, I'm not going to get into all that. And I just took a moment to answer a request from a listener to talk about black helicopters. Now, are they the forerunners of UN invasion? Who can know? But there are many, many people who are in fear, and the black helicopters have been seen around cattle mutilation sites. I think it's time the answer to what they are is put forth. But for now, we've run out of time. I'll be back tomorrow, same time. I won't be ranting and raving. I'll be talking about something that's related to a unsolved mystery. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.